failure of any society is how it treats its women and girls. The smart, powerful, creative, accomplished young women.
We can fight.
I'm here because of you. I'm here because girls like you inspire me. Many of these girls have faced unthinkable obstacles just to attend school. Any society is how it treats its women and girls.
Buttercups, it's another episode of Surly Voices here on WMNF Tampa 88.5. My name is Liz. I'm one of your hosts this morning, and across from me is Miss Donna. How you doing, Donna?
You know what? I'm ready to chop it up.
Chop it up. Tell us what we're chopping up, Donna.
Okay, so first of all, we got to talk about the non-committed votes, right? I feel like you guys are that one card in the tarot deck, the Fool, where he's about to walk over the cliff.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so that's what the electorate is giving. At least the liberal portion of the electorate is giving right now. And we're going to break that down with numbers, not just feelings. Although I'm going to tell you my feelings about it. We're going to give you the numbers.
Yeah, because you know we don't hold back our feelings here. And we welcome any input you have in the process here. You can call us at 813-239-9663. Or you can email to dj@wmnf.org. Okay, so give us your deets. Give us your numbers.
Okay, so for starters, the problem that we're having in Minnesota. Now, what you don't know about Minnesota, I work in Minnesota anywhere from 3 to 6 months out of most years. And so it's like my home away from home. You'll find me in Minneapolis like on random August, mm-hmm. right? They had 19% uncommitted. So for all of the people who are not in the know, and there's no shame in that. If you don't know, you don't know. But you should ask someone. And you didn't ask me, but I'm going to tell you. Because Minnesota boasts the highest civic engagement rates in the country, and for those of you who keep saying, people vote against their own interests, I just don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
What you should understand is the same way that crime is caused by the economy. Okay? People don't just beat each other down in the streets because they're happy, you know, and then they pick their parasol up and continue to stroll on the breezeway. That's not how it works. When people don't have the things that they need, they tend not to focus on things like the election and the nightly news, right? They focus on the world around, the 5 feet around them that they have to engage to survive. And so when Minnesotans have an excellent economy, I can tell you my experience with that is it's very difficult to hire people at $25 or $35 an hour. It is difficult to hire young people in the state of Minnesota. The reason for that is that they have a 3.6 unemployment rate on the average. So everybody that wants a job and that is employable is employed.
Dang.
Right?
If it wouldn't be such a hellish place to live, it might be looking into moving.
It's that weather. It's the 30 belows that get me, that do me up, right? I live in Florida for a reason. And I did my time, you know, in the weather, but I digress. So Minnesota has a 3.6 unemployment rate, a very robust economy. There are large companies that are based there like Best Buy, Wells Fargo. Think of Wells Fargo not just as an international bank, but as a international mortgage house.
Mm.
So then you can imagine the type of tax base that drives that economy. The other thing that you need to know is that, Lifetime, gyms. Are also originated and based in Minnesota. So what you need to understand is that, and the other thing, just for grins, is that a lot of people are familiar with how many skyscrapers are in Chicago or New York. If you haven't seen the skyline of Minneapolis, you should Google it.
Uh-oh.
It is absolutely, I was coming from like Eden Prairie, like which is like outside the city. And I came over a hill and I was blown away by the intensity of the Minneapolis skyline. It is truly a shining city on a hill.
Wow.
Okay. And the land of 10,000 lakes to boost. And it is the one of the most cleanest cities in the country because of the, of course, Scandinavian heritage. Right?
Let me ask you this. In all this cold and cleanliness and Scandinavian ancestry, what is the proportion of people in Minneapolis who are not white?
Well, Minneapolis has a very large Somali population.
Ah, okay.
They had provided entry and asylum to a lot of Somali people as through their perilous exodus out of Somalia for reasons that I could do 10 shows on, but I won't do that because I want to talk about the U.S., you know, in engaging with these countries and basically destroying their economies, you know, but we won't do that today. The large Somali population, large Muslim population, mosques everywhere, kids leaving work to go pray routinely and not coming back because kids. but there is a very imperiled community called the North End in Minneapolis. They average about one drive-by per day. Yes. And that is a problem. I mean, it's a racist country, and so the inequities exist. The people that I'm talking to probably don't think, and many don't actually care about that segment, and so I'm glad you asked. It exists, it is real, and it's important to note that the Somali population, because they immigrated into Minneapolis in such large numbers, they have become African-American. They're not model minorities, like a Nigerian population in Houston. They talk like black kids. They dress like black kids. They have embodied the culture wholly because they have been locked out of the dominant culture. So that was interesting to me because I've never seen Africans become assimilate into African-American culture. Most immigrants assimilate into white culture because the benefits are there. So back to the numbers at hand here. Problem we got going here is Minneapolitans, as some say, are highly civic engaged because of their robust economy, because they have relatively low numbers of poverty compared to other large urban centers in the United States. And they voted in their primary at 19%. Uncommitted, which is highly unusual in a blue state. More deets on Minneapolis. They have Tim Walz as the governor, who is a former school teacher.
Oh.
And union guy, who, when I talk to him, he sounds like he would take you out back if he didn't like you. Sounds like he's a voice of a former smoker.
Right.
So this guy is a gritty, blue-collar dude that's running the state. They also have the majority, and this is stuff that I know off the top of my head because I know Minneapolis. They have the trifecta. They got the governor, blue house, blue senate.
Ah, and getting things done.
Right. They got a plan to go 100% renewable in 10 years.
Wow.
Yes, at the state level. Most municipalities are already moving in that direction even prior to that legislation. So now that you understand the backdrop, the political backdrop in writ large of Missouri, of Minnesota, is another state I spent a lot of time in. We won't talk about them today. Oh, boy. 19%, they are making a very clear statement. What you see in that number that wouldn't automatically jump out to someone who is not knowledgeable is that large Muslim population.
Wow.
Large Muslim population are saying we don't want it.
Yeah.
St. Cloud and in Minneapolis. St. Paul as well. St. Paul, they call them the Twin Cities because St. Paul is, you know, they're kind of separated, but they're, the capital is in St. Paul, and then all the commerce is in Minneapolis. So in St. Paul, there's a large Muslim population. It's a little cheaper to live over there. The Muslims are saying, absolutely not, Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They are not committing to that. Also, 33% of the people in Minneapolis and in Minnesota have a college, some college education. They have one of the highest, outside of D.C., the highest number of people with advanced degrees in the United States. And those people are saying, we recognize historical patterns when we see them. Absolutely not, Mr. Biden. So the reason why those numbers are the highest in the country for non-committed is because this is the highest level of civic engagement in the country brought about by the sense of domestic satisfaction,
right,
which supports that. You move over to Michigan, these big Midwestern states that have good economies. And yes, Michigan, we saw Flint. They have their problems with marginalizing and throwing people away, as every American city does, because whether you guys like it or not, we live in a country that has racist history and is doing racist things systemically to continue to benefit from that racism. Mm-hmm. And so you see that in Michigan next door. Not so much. We didn't see it happen in Illinois. Illinois is one of those. I've worked in Illinois extensively. They are the people who worry about themselves only, right?
Ah.
Yeah, they worry about themselves, but don't ever become the governor of Illinois. You'll go straight to prison. North Carolina.
You see, or the mayor of Chicago.
It's where you end your political career, okay? Don't do it. Ask Axelrod and what's his name? Who was Rahm Emanuel.
Rahm Emanuel, yeah.
And Rod. So Massachusetts also. In the United States, that they're one of two states, Minnesota and Massachusetts, or is it Connecticut? Well, you guys call me if I'm getting this wrong. Have the highest unemployment, weekly unemployment payments. That also reflects that in the United States. In Minnesota, it's just short of $900 a week if you're out of work over there. It's $890 a week. The highest, I believe, is either Seattle or Massachusetts or Connecticut, with over $1,000 a week.
Wow.
Right? So that tells you about the state's wealth, mm-hmm. right, the tax base there. North Carolina, what you're seeing in North Carolina, 13% uncommitted, is all of those universities there and a relatively robust economy for a southern state.
Huh.
13%. You see, when people are educated, they can see what's going on. You can't fool them.
Right.
Right? And they're going to make their protests known because they understand that it's human lives by the tens of thousands that are on the line. Now what you might not grasp, you see that, you can't see it, Liz, is Tennessee and Alabama.
Mm.
Alabama is coming in at 6% uncommitted.
Kind of high for Alabama, no?
It's high for Alabama, but there are a lot of schools in Alabama, too.
Ah, yeah.
A lot of schools in Alabama, so that might be your student population, because it's smaller, right? It's smaller by 10% of Minnesota, and so you may be seeing that student populations in protest in Tennessee and in Alabama. Colorado, another highly educated state with a robust economy and a surplus in their state budget. I lived in Colorado for 14 years. It's buoyed by the cannabis industry, also natural gas in Colorado, and those horrible Crocs that you guys will not stop buying. Oat milk and soy milk are also coming out of Boulder. Don't ask me how I know all these industries in the country. And that is driving in. CU Boulder, big school. It's 30,000 students, a total of 50,000 people engaged in student in the school, in and around that one of top 10 most beautiful campuses in the country. And I can attest to that because my son attends there. It's expensive. So, expensive.
Tuition, Mom.
Yes. In Nevada, again, I think that you're seeing some of the student population, and a state that is increasingly blue.
Yeah.
Right? You see Nevada kind of turning, and that might have to do with Californians, which border it, and Colorado, which is a state away, right? People are pouring out of these very expensive real estate and rental markets into Nevada, because there's a lot of land there.
Your skin dries up in 2 seconds in Nevada.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be a gator. I can do that here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Iowa, 4%. That's a very low vote. And some of this stuff you may see mixed in. You know, I was just in New York. There's a lot of anti-Biden sentiment in New York outside of the urban core.
Mm.
Right? Tom Suozzi notably said that he did not want Joe Biden to come and stump for him on his campaign. He didn't think that in his extremely moderate district that it would work. But he was just elected a Republican.
Right.
A young Republican who is now running in New York 1, and we'll get to him on another show. Santos is back.
Yeah.
But Biden, the headline on this, you can see this on my page. I'm Donna L. Davis. There's a cartoon picture of me. We're going to get to the phones here in just a second because I know you guys want to talk about this. Is that it's on my page, and it says, Biden can't shake the protest votes against his Israel policy. I did not repost that as a commentary on the Israeli conflict, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I posted that because I understand, and I'll stop here and let Liz weigh in, is because I understand that some of you act as if all of these different individuals around the country, millions of people, making these protest votes don't matter or there's something wrong with them. Their protest is valid, and I would suggest to those of you who are vote blue, no matter who, blue wave people, I would suggest to you that you kind of get down into it and evaluate what you're looking at instead of scoffing at it and blowing it off because it's going to bite you in half in November and you're going to have you could have the shock of your life.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's talk to John in Port Richey. Hi, John.
Hey, thanks for the show. Yeah, I wanted to talk about the protest vote.
Yes.
I applaud him for doing that, especially in the primaries where it's not really going to make any difference, mm-hmm. but yet you get to make your voice heard and maybe that'll kick Joe Biden a little bit to do something in the Middle East and the Gaza Strip, because what's happening over there is just atrocious and he should be doing something. But my question would be, too, I think there was a guy in Michigan who said, well, in the general election, put Trump in. Really, really hurt Joe Biden. And my thought is, well, who do you think is going to be at least somewhat sympathetic as president to the Palestinians? Trump or Biden? I think if Trump gets in there, he's going to tell Netanyahu, do whatever you want. Take it over. Occupy it. It's yours. Oh, by the way, take the West Bank over, too. Or at least Joe Biden, I wish he would do more, would at least be somewhat sympathetic and hold that back a little bit as much as he could. Now, maybe when he's in his second term, he doesn't have to worry about getting reelected, so he might do more about being hard on Israel so he doesn't have to worry about the CPAC and all that mm-hmm. political angle on it. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much, John. Yeah. And you're listening to Surly Voices on WMNF Tampa 88.5. We are talking about the, do we call it protest vote, Don? Is that what we're calling it?
Yes.
The protest votes, uncommitted. And certainly, I am a fan for that. And I don't want to hear, well, of course we're going to hear because we hear it every time.
Right. Of course.
Every time somebody loses an election, the masses point at the people who didn't want to vote or didn't want to vote blue. And it's all your fault. It's all your fault. No, ma'am. It's not all our fault. It's the fault of the people who don't give us a say in who the party candidate is. There's probably Republicans out there who feel the same way. It's like, oh my God, Trump again? No way. But they're not going to swing all the way over to Biden. So what are they supposed to do? They're probably putting in the votes as well.
Well, our caller is absolutely right. Jeff, was this Jeff?
John.
John. So John said that it doesn't hurt during the primary. Two, it's a way for Joe Biden to understand how much of the electorate might be willing
to drive this thing over the cliff and bring back, have Trump be 45 and 47 if he doesn't respond. I'm starting to see more of what he is saying about the suffering in Gaza be empathetic to their plight. I mean, it's such a big thing. It sounds like a small way to say, I care, right? Like, it's out of control, right? It's
right.
It's a big thing. It's like a historic, seismic event on planet Earth. So saying he's empathetic to it, you know, while eating an ice cream cone is kind of wild. But that's where we are, right? That's the world we live in. So we can't, you know, I can't describe it any other way than what it is without making up stories. I will say that, yes, while this may indicate that people are making a protest vote because in a state like Minnesota, they can. Not in Alabama, though. Right? In Alabama, well, yes, they can because it's a red state and it's going to go to Trump in the general election. I didn't think that through. I apologize. But these, and Nevada is a swing state. Right? And Arizona. And so the numbers that you're seeing indicate that people are making a protest vote because it doesn't hurt in the primary. But if those people are as adamant because it's such a big deal, it's not a small thing. It's not a style note. It's human lives in a historic event. they may be willing to cast that vote again in the general election if nothing changes and if we continue without this ceasefire. And so they're attempting to drive our president into a ceasefire and to defund Gaza. That should be a hashtag. Defund Gaza. Defund Israel. So and so I think that yes to that, but don't downplay the possibility that people are willing to go further here.
Right. Well, and so I'm sitting up here thinking, you know, Biden, statistically, if you look at, this is how they do it in the legal field. It's, ooh, the phones are going crazy.
I love it.
So in the legal field, when you're looking at damages, you look to see what the plaintiff's life expectancy is. And there's tables. There's all kinds of tables for that. And so they, how old is Joe Biden now?
Is at around 80.
Okay. So we look at the life expectancy tables, and you can pick pretty much anyone. The Social Security one is the one that I use. And so if he's out there, I thought he was older than 80, but let's just use the 80 as the guideline. Again, you can get this on the internets at the Social Security place. Let's see. 80. So as an 80-year-old man in America, he's got a life expectancy of 7.74 years. So that means he's expecting to devote four of those seven. And this is statistically, it looks at all, as the medical experts say, it looks at all comers. And so it's an average. It's not a detailed study of Joe Biden. So statistically, at least, he is looking at 7.74 years, three of which are going to be devoted, or four of which will be devoted to the presidency. That's assuming he doesn't develop some kind of age-related neurological process like dementia. And so that alone, I mean, why would you want to spend your last years on Earth as a president? No, well, number one, I know why Joe Biden does, because hello, Joe Biden. But it's like, why do we not want folks with a better life expectancy? And I mean, this is just hard facts. I mean, it's a fact of life that the older we get, the closer we get to dying. So let's talk to some of these people here on the phone. Janini in Tampa. Hi, Janini.
Hey, it's Jiminy.
Like Jiminy, like Jiminy Cricket.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Frank can't spell, so it's they're had the wrong half the time.
No worries. I was because I'm one of those sort of undetermined voters. I really have no faith in Joe Biden or Donald Trump. So I've been looking into, and I'm college educated. I'm about 24. I'm looking into third party candidates. And one that I found really recently that gives me a lot of hope, honestly, is Jasmine Sherman. Have you heard of her?
I have not. Tell me about her.
I would definitely recommend looking into her. She is a she's a very educated young woman. Well, I don't know how old she is, honestly. I guess old enough to run for president. And she is, she actually cares. She's a community leader. She is a Black non-binary individual. They see the problems. They see their actual political platform has a lot of informed, policies that are ready to be enacted, and all of them are on their website. I believe the campaign is Sherman and Blue Bear, and it's all there on the website. It's even able to be read straight to you.
Okay. I gotta interrupt you, Jimmy, because I don't wanna waste anybody's time.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the process of ballot access in the United States?
No, ma'am.
Okay. So ballot access, which I did for Amy Klobuchar as her national director in 2019-20, is the process by which a candidate procures their space on the ballot in 50 states, U.S. territories, mm-hmm. and other U.S. territories. Also including Democrats abroad, which is mostly people who are citizens of the United States, and military personnel. Now, in order for a person to get on the ballot, they have to procure their spot on the ballot in all of these states. So these aren't real candidates. And I want to disabuse you guys of the notion that these third-party candidates from non-viable third-party organizations are not real. Not because I say so. Not because they upset me, because they don't. We need another party.
Mm-hmm.
It is because it is impossible for an individual candidate at this point, coming out of groups we've never heard of and those we have,
right,
to get on the ballot, because it costs millions of dollars, which most of these candidates never have access to. And there's no way for this individual, there's no way for them to get on the ballot. It's almost impossible for Kennedy to get on the ballot.
Right, and his last name is Kennedy.
Right.
The Kennedy.
Right. And so I saw an article yesterday, and my eyes went over it because I understand ballot access. And when they offered me this contract in 2019, they said 11 people in this country know how to do this job. They're all white men. Would you like to be number 11? And it wasn't necessarily the candidate of my dreams, but it was a primary. And I ended up really liking Klobuchar, but I said yes. So there aren't very many people in this country that understand ballot access, and you're talking to one of them right now. These candidates have no chance of being on the ballot in enough states. So there's states that you can just fill out a form, right, and pay $25,000 somewhere in the Carolinas. The party just wants money. There are places where you have to actually collect signatures. All of those deadlines from Virginia to New York to Vermont, they're all passed. There's no path to a primary, a viable position on the ballot at all. There's no point.
So the path to, it's all blocked by
bureaucracy.
And
money.
Bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So people that actually stand for and listen to the actual people of the United States can no longer be in leadership positions.
Yes, like, that's long before you were born.
That the whole nation was founded by blue-collar, like, farmers. You know?
They weren't blue-collar farmers,
though.
They were landed gentry.
They were landed gentry. They wrote the entire country into existence to benefit them. And if you study it, you will find that we've never had a chance. And I know as a Gen Z Gen Zer and some of the later millennials, you guys didn't get the civics education in school.
No.
But Alexander Hamilton, y'all love it because of the play. But the bottom line was that he was almost a Tory.
Yeah.
Okay. So you because you don't understand, gosh, I hate to say that out loud because it sounds so rude.
Well, but
I think it's true. Our education is not doing what it needs to.
Right.
We ought to do a fun civics program.
No, they need to get them all in a room and tell them your life depends on it. You want your grandkids to have a life on the land of your forebears? Here's what you got to do. Okay, stop listening to Alexander Hamilton. He wasn't no hero. He wrote the financial systems in the song. It says they wrote financial systems into existence. The bit that you're bristling under right now is through his brilliant pen. That we worship because of the miscalculations made by Lin Emanuel for our entertainment, right? But entertainment is not entertainment when you don't know history.
Exactly.
I'm on a soapbox now.
Yeah.
So stay with me, okay? So what you guys have to do is you have the power. You have the power. I'm watching from the sideline, anxious about my old age, because I need to see what the kids are going to do. You guys got to take this thing to the edge. You got to do it. And if you do it, we win. If you continue to think these third party, you got to steal the Democratic Party.
Right.
You got to take the table from under their, you got to remove the chairs from under their fannies.
Yes.
If you do that, you win. You don't even have to recreate the wheel. There's enough of you to just shut the ongoings of the party as business as usual down and drive it in another direction. The kids have that power. They got to take it.
All right. Thanks so much for calling, Gemini.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good one, guys.
You too. Bye-bye. Thanks. All right, next up
is... You're saving the world.
Yeah, Simon in Lakeland. Hi, Simon.
Hi, good morning, ladies. Just want to give you two examples of a thinking man's thinking exercise. New York Times, May 16th, 1948, headlines, front page. New York Times, Arab armies invade Palestine, reach Gaza, bomb Tel Aviv. Again, U.S. considers lifting arms ban. Boy, what a twist in history, huh? Another exercise, the Democratic Socialists of America. What do they do in November of 2023? They're standing outside Hakeem Jeffries' headquarters, and they're holding a ceasefire poster with a watermelon on it.
Oh my God.
Why are they holding a watermelon on the poster calling for a ceasefire? These are the thinking people, future of America.
I know the answer to that question, but I'm not going to indulge you today.
No, the watermelon represents Palestinians.
Of course. Right. You see it now on their printed materials.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. But you got to think a little deeper than that. In fact, Hakeem Jeffries' spokesperson said that white supremacists think of those kind of logos. So I get back to education. Yes, young people are...
You're right. Yeah.
Okay. Come on. As far as the protest, non-protest, I think when you get into the booth and you have to think who you want, whether it's Joe Biden or whether you want Donald Trump, I think the reflection is more so rather than party, just like this conflict, it's of people looking in the mirror and thinking of who they are themselves and who they represent themselves. Because when you're voting for a party, you're not getting everything you want.
Right.
Obama deported 3 million people. Mm-hmm. People still voted for Obama. Mm-hmm. And you could go on and go on. So we're listening to a progressive radio station. With all due respect, Louis Farrakhan could be on the Democratic Party and he'd maybe get in the double digits. Why? Because people vote D and people vote R regardless.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
Take care, ladies.
Thank you, Simon.
Hey, have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye. All right. Dave in Tampa. Thanks for holding on so long, Dave.
Well, first I have to say before Dave.
Oh, wait.
I have to say I got to sign off on Simon. I did not detect any lies.
Okay.
Are mistruths in that state, in his statement.
All right. So now, Dave.
Hey, good morning.
Hey,
good morning.
I've got an exercise and some deep thinking for us as well.
Okay.
Instead of protest voting, how about we boycott and divest from Israel? How about we start talking about that instead of protest voting in a primary election? Let's go after Israel where it's going to hurt them, and that's in their economy.
Well,
boycott them.
The people in charge of doing the divesting are united right. in the front supporting Israel. So how do we get that done when Congress and the president are out there saying, oh, yes, we support Israel. We're giving them arms, but not people. We're giving them arms.
Well, you do that the same way you create an insurrection in the Democratic Party. You get young people united behind a cause, and you start acting locally to boycott Israel.
But I think that's a happening.
Way you do any of the things you're talking about.
I think that's happening already.
Power.
I think that's happening.
Okay, well, it's all right. Well, we've spent almost an hour on this program.
We can spend our time how we want. I think you're struggling with the idea that people can act in the ways that they want, not just in how you're confronting us, but how you're confronting the choices that people are making in the electorate, right? And so if you're a creative thinking man, then you go to the drawing board and you try to figure out how to make those things happen instead of suggesting them in anger to the air.
No, I'm just suggesting that instead of protest voting, which really has no impact on Israeli policy or American policy towards Israel, really, but if you really want to affect change, and I love what you said about, you know, an insurrection in the Democratic Party. I mean, I hope that does happen. That would be great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think boycotting Israel and divesting from Israel ought to be one of the things that those young people are talking about. If you want to change American policy, you want to really get Israel, you really want to stop the genocide, let's shut them down economically. Let's really hit them hard in their economy where they're going to suffer.
So let me ask you a question. If in the United States we have enough issues domestically that could be effectively managed by a general strike, if we haven't been able to mount a general strike to impact our domestic issues, what makes you think that a BDS movement, a robust BDS movement, that when we last had it in like 2017 through 20, that was led by a lot of the progressive in the street movements at the time, a lot of those people can't get jobs today. It scared a lot of people because we were addressing a sacred cow. And so a lot of people are afraid at these universities. You see the witch hunts that happen when people try to stand up for what's right. And so in a capitalist society, when you impose that type of blacklisting on someone where they can't get a job, it's imposing a sort of death. I've said this before. And so people are literally questioning whether they should put their head on a financial guillotine in order to stand up for what's right. It's easy for us that aren't going to have financial repercussions, to speak out. And we should speak out more because so many people are unable to. They've got families, they've got mortgages. And so, and those of us who, there are many of us who say, well, you know, the people in Gaza don't have that. But if we're not going to face our own issues with the looming economic death that can happen on a blacklist, why would we do it for people halfway around the world that we've never seen?
Well, I think you're not doing it just, you're doing it because it's for the same reason people did it during the Vietnam War.
Right.
And, you know, it's always going to be a fight, and there's no way around that. I mean, that's not a reason not to do it.
No.
I understand what you're saying mm-hmm. completely, but it's not a reason not to do it, and it takes a few brave people to lead, and others will follow, and these things will change.
Yeah, I think people like Finkelstein, he has definitely had those things happen to him. He's lost his job. He's lost a lot of esteem. A very brilliant man who spent his entire life, in academic studies. And, you know, he is a pariah in a lot of circles now. People see that. Young people see that. And you have to remember this. The young people who took the streets during Vietnam, they had a whole different set of principles,
yeah,
and ideas about self-preservation and how important it was or it was not than the Instagram generation, the TikTok generation.
Well, I think you're true. I think that's true to an extent, but I don't think it's as true as maybe you're making it out.
I didn't. How am I making it out, though? I mean, how do you gauge that?
I don't think young people today are that much different than they were in the late 60s. I think in Vietnam, there was more self-interest because of the draft.
Mm-hmm.
But I think young people today are just as appalled by what Israel is doing.
And that's why I told you earlier.
In Vietnam.
That's why I told you earlier, they are in the streets. We had a young woman on here who is about closer to my age, who is doing some leading on that end, Ruth Beltran, and she wouldn't stop screaming, so we had to let her go. But she, before she took her leave, she made us aware of the energy in the streets. And if you're following PSL, you will see that the young people are actually in the streets. I've been in the streets with them. I've led them for years. For years, thousands of people in the streets of Tampa who want this new world that you and I are discussing from our, you know, senior armchairs. I mean, and I'm probably not as old as most of the people that are listening to the radio station, but I'm definitely not 24. And so I think the energy is there. I think that there are a lot of young people willing to make that sacrifice, given that we haven't given them options to enter gainful society. And those numbers are going to grow as this housing market and the job market don't keep up with the cost of living. We're going to see more and more people willing to make that jump.
Okay, Dave, we're going to have to let you. Dave, we're going to have. Dave, we're going to have to let you go because we've got folks on in the queue. Okay. So thanks for calling and talk to you later.
Call us back next week, Dave.
Yeah. John in Lutz.
Hello. How are you all doing today?
Good, John.
Good. How are you?
What you got?
I'm doing okay. I'm sorry. I joined the show late, so I'm afraid I missed the first 45 minutes. I'm sorry. I was responding to in a very long email in support of the people of Palestine,
mm-hmm.
and I had a concept that I wanted to share with you and your listeners.
Okay.
And that concept is that the Holocaust never ended. It simply went from being waged upon the Jewish people in 1945 to being waged by the Jewish state in 1948. It has continued for 75 years since 1948. The Holocaust has never ended. It must end. It must end now.
All right. Thanks for calling, John.
All right, I'm going to take some emails here, and I'm going to circle back on this one, Anne in Tampa. Please, please discuss. Without ranked choice voting, instant runoff voting, only one of the top two candidates will be elected. We don't have the luxury of failing to vote against Trump. That means doing our duty to vote for Biden unless we want Trump. Okay, we're going to come back to that. Wendy says, loved the mini civics lesson. It is my honor. Great show, as always, ladies. Okay? And Sean says, a watermelon in this context is not a racist trope. I think that Simon said that.
Yeah, Simon said that. Yeah. I was the one that was aghast that somebody was putting watermelons on stuff because I was raised in the deep, deep South.
You know, and you got red rules for radicals, you know, or
no.
Solomon's key. But this is a symbol of a Palestine where people are not able to fly the flag. They use the watermelon.
Okay. That explains.
All right. And so that is what Simon was saying. And that's why Simon and I, Sean, laughed when he said that Speaker Jeffries' staffer, probably one that I talked to when I was in New York. I won't say any names, but I talk to these people. I work with these people. And DSA is an anti-racist organization. So no one said that we were agreeing. I was agreeing with Simon. So Dre Long says, you don't often get, hold on, let me get this. Good morning, Surleys. Did a gentleman caller before suggest voters can demonstrate their approval for politicians and their policy positions with their primary votes? It sounds interesting. If so, what methods are there? Strategic voting and strategic commas, voting via character with lapel pins, are those cool rubber wristbands.
We got enough of those cool rubber wristbands.
Yeah. So I think that, yeah, he did suggest that. And I think that people are doing that. Now, the question, Dre, that I would ask, the next question here, I think, is to what effect? To what effect? And so if you would like to discuss that, we still have some time for you to give us a call. Donna and Liz, love what you say. You always get to the heart of the matter with empathy and real facts. You know what? Sometimes I feel like I'm a train wreck in here, just doing stuff. Days like today, I feel like I'm doing the Lord's work. That's as in Audre Lorde, L-O-R-D-E, for the uninitiated. Arch feminist and ruler of the world. Okay. The goddess to which we frequently refer. And ranked choice voting. Okay. Now, ranked choice voting. Oh, let me do this first. Hi, Dave from Sarasota. You don't agree with this reality, but Biden has to stand for Israel and Netanyahu. Netanyahu, or he will lose the Jewish American vote and money. Also, evangelicals. Also, you're right. If Trump wins, let's not do what they want, just like he does with Putler from Russia.
And all right, this is where I want to steer the conversation now about the State of the Union address, because it came on after our show last week. And I watched it. Well, I watched it from YouTube because I couldn't stand to do it live, because I never would have gone to sleep. I would have been so angry. One of the things, one of the glaring things to me was he's all tough on Putin and pro-Ukraine, and then he gets to Israel and Palestine, and it's like, it's talking out of both sides of your mouth. Either you are for oppressed people or you're not. And so it's the mental gymnastics there kind of made me wild.
Well, my concern is this, you know, when we're discussing Israel, and you cannot conflate Israel with the Jewish people. Right. And I think that our email writer did just that. He said that if the president doesn't support Israel, he automatically loses the Jewish vote. That line of logic makes the Jewish people
culpable.
An ideological monolith.
Right.
Which, as we see with the protests in the street and some of the protests in Grand Central Station and on the streets of New York and in California and around the country, we see JVP, Jewish Voices for Peace, and other organizations heavily populated by people who profess to be of the Jewish faith or claim to be ethnically Jewish are heading those organizations. We saw Israelism, that movie that was done.
Yes,
right?
That was a good movie.
Okay, and so it just because someone is Jewish does not mean that they support what's happening in Israel. And I think that most Jewish people who are objectors would take umbrage to that statement. And so I didn't want to speed by
right.
the conflation that was made there. And because I think that there are a lot of people that are like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
Are we doing that? Because we tell people not to do that when they talk about our communities. And so we're going to ask people, even if they support us, not to also do that.
Right.
Okay.
Stephen in St. Petersburg. Good morning.
All right. Hey, good. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Really good. Yeah, I just wanted to call in, and I don't know if anybody ever... I'm always kind of like a history nut. I like to look back in history and study, you know, a subject, you know, and really researching it. You know, a lot of folks, you know, if you study the situation in that part of the world, the Middle East, there was, I don't know if people were aware, the word Palestine, okay, comes from the word Philistine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Philistines originally migrated, you know, from the Greek Isles around from Greece, Bulgaria, that area, into Canaan, which the land of the Canaanites, or the land of Canaan, is where you had many tribes. You had the Hittites, you had the Jebusites, you had the Philistines, okay. You had the Moabites.
And go right to the point. Go right to the point. Okay.
Well, if the Philistines or Palestinians originally came from Greece, mm-hmm. and migrated, like history teaches, mm-hmm. how could Arab people claim to be Philistines if they were Greeks?
So I think what's important here is that once upon a time, people that looked like me were Africans. And now we're Americans. There were people who converted to Judaism in the 15th century as Jews who were displaced, traveled through the eastern part of Europe as they left the Middle East. And those individuals are now considered to be ethnically Jewish.
But well,
and so no, wait. You asked a question. I'm answering it.
What?
Right? And then we're going to... Okay, let me finish.
Steven.
Nobody interrupted you, Steve. And so the way that we evolve, I studied anthropology, we evolve physically, our nationalities change. People left Europe and they came here and they were British and now they are, their nationality is American. And so the conversation, it lends nothing to the and then we're going to move on, okay?
No, well, what I'm saying is...
Hear me out. We're going to move on from that. All right. Thank you so much for calling.
Propaganda.
Thank you so much for calling. So what we're going to say here is that we're not going to inject a conversation about immediate loss of life by the tens of thousands with obscure conversations about the Temple Mount. Okay, we ain't doing it in here. You can do it there. We're not going to talk about Philistines and semantics and shifting nationalities as people have moved across the planet. We're not doing it.
Right. People are dying by the thousands.
Yeah. Keep it simple.
Yeah.
All right.
It doesn't matter where their folks originated from.
There's a couple emails here. One is... they blame Ralph for Bush. The first sentence was a little vulgar, so we're going to leave it out. This is from Martin. But it was the Supreme Court that stole the election. You could not pick two worse candidates. They should run the vice president. If God wanted us to vote, they would have given us candidates. Yeah, Senator Byrd told us that. I held my nose and voted for Clinton and Biden, but I will not waste my vote again. So for all of you people that think that people are not willing to drive this thing off the cliff in the general election, you really need to start doing some organizing. Wow. Liz?
It's like, what?
Anyway, here's another one. Just a thought about Biden-Harris. Because if people took the time to write these, I want to get them in.
Yeah.
In the event that Biden is reelected, but for health reasons could not finish his term, we have VP Harris who could step up. That makes me feel a lot better about voting blue this time. That's fair enough, Rose.
That's a fair comment,
and she's
Rose.
In Pennsylvania.
I think if Amy Klobuchar goes to the convention... And gets enough support, she could be the next president.
She could.
Because she is, number one, she's got the D behind her name, but number two, the moderates of both parties are more embracing of her than either of the choices that are
on
the table.
And Minnesota is the poster child for where our country is. It's the bellwether.
Right.
Right? So that would make sense.
So now, you need to get on the phone with Amy and tell her she needs to do a coup.
I'll be in D.C. on 26th. Voting for a third-party candidate will only put Trump back into the White House, guaranteed. Randy in Palm Harbor. Vitrine says that, okay, I read that one, and that's it. That's it for the emails.
I got one here that just came in. Although I'm intrigued, No, this is not the one that you read. Okay. Although I am intrigued by a third-party option and have never been a huge fan of Biden, I'm still a hardcore Bernie fan. I am terrified at the thought of Trump winning the next election and honestly feel that this movement of uncommitted voting, as enticing as it is, has a good chance of leading us back to a second presidential term with Trump. Can you speak to this?
Yes. Yes. Okay, we'll do it. Because
Frank gave me the finger.
Yes.
So.
If we, they're very real danger of bringing Trump back. I'm going to vote for Biden for that reason. But I am going to interrogate and litigate the possibility of other citizens making choices that are different than mine. And we must consider it. We would like for people not to bring Trump back, because I think in the short run, people are going to get something they think they want. In the long run, the United States will cease to exist as we know it. And so that's what's on the table.
All right. And I still blame everybody for not imprisoning Trump by now, because we're 3 years post-insurrection.
Yeah, we watching y'all.
Yeah. All right. So thank you for joining us today. Join us again next Thursday at 10 a.m. on Surly Voices on WMNF Tampa 88.5.